Sourcing Matters Podcast. This is your host, Aaron Niederhelman, sharing stories of our food. And welcome back to Sourcing Matters. This is your host, Aaron Niederhelman. Today, we welcome Icelandic entrepreneur, author, and speaker Thor Sigvason to the show. Thor is the founder and chairman of the Iceland Ocean Cluster. He's also the co-founder of Codland, and he's launched a few food halls and the Ocean House in Reykjavik. Sigvason has written 5 books on the topics of international business, knowledge networks, and salmon. All great stuff, Thor. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Of course. Hey, I got to ask, Thor, did you watch the Super Bowl?
Yes, I actually did. And I was a little bit disappointed, not in the results, but in the sort of the outcome, how few scores there were. I love the scores, by the way.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's I'd ask because I know it's a very American thing. I get somewhat of a global audience. Time difference really is a challenge. I'm sure it was around, you know, first thing in the morning for you.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah.
But what a spectacle, right? And it was a bit of a poor game. 13-3, the lowest total point scores in Super Bowl history. A 3-3 tie score at fourth quarter with no last minute fireworks. And you know, here in the States, that's a big thing around the Super Bowl, which is this TV ads, which are a little lackluster, to be honest, this time around. So we were all sold on things last night that were pretty darn average. But I'm a native New Englander, and the Patriots won. So that's a positive thing. Hey, let me ask this, too, because I want to throw this in to see if there's any parallels. So we have the commissioner of football, Roger Goodell. He's still focusing on really what's not important. He actually is not taking care of the health care of his past players in the 80s and 90s. He's not dealing with issues around CTED brain injuries and the impact that's having throughout their lifetime. And he's not even holding the players accountable currently for the violence and hate and stupidity. Instead, this guy launches a $22 million Deflategate investigation into my boy Tommy Brady. Now, come on, it's as a Bostonian, I am biased here, but, and I might be a lackey, but Goodell is just he's a henchman for these tycoon owners in the NFL. And without a doubt, the real winners are those 32 owners who benefited from that, under that shield, that $100 billion shield that seems to win in all circumstances. But I still watched every minute, including all the advertisements. Do you have any fandom that you get into? Is it the English Premier League? Do you follow soccer in that way?
Yeah, definitely. We follow very closely soccer. I actually follow the NBA as well. And I was actually, I studied in the U.S. partly both in, mainly in North Carolina, in the Bible Belt, which I absolutely loved, and then in California partly. So, it meant that we were all involved with many of the U.S. sports, but my main interest will always be soccer. We were born that way in Iceland, I think. So, and we did quite well in the last World Cup. So we were sort of the smallest country ever to be able to take part in the World Cup finals. So we were kind of proud of that.
You should be, yes. I mean, you beat the superpower Brits, if I remember correctly, your country of 330,000 taking down a global superpower of England, right? So you can put that in their operation fork of occupancy in the 1940s and put a twist on that, right?
You're absolutely right.
Or maybe, absolutely. Maybe even better, it's a continuation of the Cod Wars from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s, where 3 times Iceland materialized victorious over the UK for fishing rights of the North Atlantic. Now, maybe, go ahead, please, sir.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But that, the good thing is that the British and the Icelanders are really close, so it hasn't hurt our good relations with the British. But It's a big part of our history, definitely.
Yeah. Well, hey, that's nice diplomacy in your answer. I appreciate that. And I think that that's a good thing, especially for what you're now creating. So let's talk a little bit more about the Icelandic Ocean Cluster. And so we had a chance to meet a few years back at the Seafood Expo North America in Boston. And for our engaged audience, the Expo North America is the second largest seafood show in the world. We have 25,000 folks from around the world that come to Boston to interact in the largest traded food commodity in the world, the $135 billion seafood industry. If I remember correctly, and I had a chance to come see what you were up to, you brought some of the local influencers, and we all came in this incredible location high atop the Boston skyline overlooking our fabled harbor. And at your event, you filled the room with supremely nice, very well-suited, and beautiful Icelandic people. And then you wooed us all in with these sharp graphics and impressive facts. I just remember coming out of the room starry-eyed and thinking, time to sign some blank checks here.
Well, I think in many ways, it all started for me. I'm actually born in a fishing village in Iceland, but it all started as a PhD research that I was actually working on starting in 2002, where I was actually studying the relationship networks of entrepreneurs, mainly engineers, and how they expanded abroad, because it seemed of such crucial importance for Iceland, being such a small country, to expand, to be sort of like the born globals of the world. We need larger markets. So I started studying those relationship networks, and I found out then already that it seemed like those that came from these natural resource industries had smaller networks. And afterwards, it's kind of obvious, but it wasn't for me in the beginning. The reason is obviously that these folks in the natural resource industries have limited resources. And due to that, they tend to keep these resources for themselves. But it's kind of difficult, especially with the seafood industry, which is changing so rapidly now, from being a very sort of resource, natural resource-oriented industry into a much more knowledge industry, which actually should spread out the knowledge and create larger networks. So the industry itself has to be in this transition. And to do so, we need to change the mindset a bit and realize the importance of building these larger networks. And that's how the cluster became a cluster. And I think many of the results that we've had so far have actually shown that there was a reason, there was a need for something like this, even in Iceland, which has been quite successful in fisheries. And that the good thing is that we're seeing it also being something of a necessity in various coastal areas all around.
And you, if I remember correctly from the presentation, what I've seen from additional research is you've effectively established a formula to replicate an innovation economy for fisheries and seafood around the world, and you've packaged that up as an Iceland ocean cluster. Have you been rolling that out across the world in the last few years, or what's your methodology for implementing this?
I think basically what we need to do is just to bring the message out. And we've already established now ocean clusters in Maine with what's called the New England Ocean Cluster. We have also done it in Massachusetts with the New Bedford Ocean Cluster. And now we're starting in Seattle, Washington, and the Alaska area with what we call the Pacific Northwest Ocean Cluster. And basically all these clusters have the same sort of mission, which is actually to network people and try to fill out the gaps that we feel is in these industries. And I think I always remember, one good example is when I was at the Boston Expo, actually, I met with this marvelous professor at a university close by, and he was actually working on an idea that I thought was absolutely marvelous mainly for the crustacean shells industry. It was lobster shells and maybe shrimp shells, etc., which are really rich of proteins. And I asked him, this is such a brilliant idea, have you met with the fisheries to talk about this idea and maybe present it to them? And he actually said, I have no connections with the industry, and I haven't done it so far. So I thought to myself, this is only like 50 miles from the coastline of like from New Bedford, which is actually the largest fishing harbor in the US. So I thought to myself, it seems to be all around, these amazing gaps that are need to be bridged between academia and industry, between people in the biotech industry and fisheries. Another example that I was really struck me quite much was that I met with a marvelous association in Boston that has around 500 members, that this is what they call the Biotech Association. Really an interesting, impressive organization. And asked them, how many of the biotech companies in this association is marine biotech? And they were able to name three, I think. I think it were three or five, whatever, out of the 500. And it just shows us the opportunities. I think we're missing these opportunities with being so close to the coastal areas, how amazing opportunities we have to strengthen these communities by bringing some of these, the knowledge that we have in these super clusters that are like Boston is for biotech, into these fishing villages and try to find ways to create much more value. And that's probably our main message for the world, is that what we've done, for instance, with the Atlantic cod in Iceland, is that we are doing exactly this. We're taking cod. We're actually catching around 50 to 60 million cod each year, sustainably, of course. And we're realizing that if we just use the fillet, as many countries are doing, we will get maybe for a 10-pounder, let's say $12 for the fillet, and then the rest in many countries is thrown away. The heads and the bones and the intestines and the liver and all that. This is used as landfill, sadly, in most countries. We are up to 80% usage of each fish now, while most countries are closer to 45%. And we are actually seeing that this rest raw material is much more valuable than the fillet itself. These are the best proteins and minerals, which we actually have to realize are the sustainable, traceable, and natural proteins that are not going to be increasing in numbers in the coming years. So we have amazing opportunity to do so, to use them. And what we're doing in Iceland is to take these proteins and create all kinds of medical products, skincare products, health products, etc. And the 10-pounder that I told you about, which is the value would be $12 for the fillet, might actually be $80 to $100 for the rest raw material of just one particular cod. So this is what the message is all about. Rather than having to pay for dump sites, you can actually create much more value with these proteins.
And so I understand you are facilitating these proper relationships, and you are maximizing revenue by looking at, you know, 2x the utilization, carcass utilization that other countries are finding, by finding appropriate home for undervalued cuts or even undervalued species. But what I find intriguing here, and I think our audience will as well, is that you've started to prove this out in your home country as well, that where through the Ocean Cluster House in Reykjavik Harbor, you've brought together some uncommon bedfellows in some circumstances, but folks that are looking at a blue economy, and you've integrated some of these conversations into a much broader spectrum. Could you share with our audience a little more about what you're up to with the Ocean Cluster House?
Well, actually, the Ocean Cluster House was an idea that was a part of the cluster, not in the beginning. I had always been reading these books that told us that distance did not matter anymore. And I was kind of impressed with that, the internet and the web and all that. But I realized also in my studies that distance really did matter. And when I started the cluster, we had, for instance, a group of 20 CEOs from small tech companies in Iceland that were all ocean related. And I knew some of them. None of them were competing directly. They had all kinds of products for the fishing industry or some ocean industries. And I asked them, you know, first I asked them to come to a place where we would meet and sit down and have a chat. And what was kind of amazing to begin with is that they started to shake hands. they introduced themselves to each other. And I said, this is our small island. Is it really so that you haven't met? And many of them said, well, we actually met at we meet probably once a year at an expo in Brussels, which is another seafood expo. But otherwise, we have never found a way to meet, or no reason, as many would have said. And that's probably when I realized that we might actually have a co-working space that would actually try to encourage people to use the same coffee machine. And so we started this house, and actually people in the beginning said, this is not going to work out in such a small country like ours. There's not that many companies involved. Now we started with 10 companies. We're up to 70 companies now, 70 companies. And we need more space. So it's great. But the other thing is that we're also always looking at the whole value line. So we're actually saying seafood is not only the guy who's catching the fish and processing the fish. Hmm. We're also looking for people that are designing the products and doing bio products from it, doing pharmaceutical products, and even designing food, you know, clothes from the leather of the fish, which is a big thing in Iceland now. It's been an amazing development with fish skin being developed into leather, for instance. So all this is creating this community that is, I think, more dynamic than I realized in the beginning. And the good thing is that I can actually become obsolete now. The coffee machine is doing more job than I am doing, really. And I'm serious about it. Hmm. So we don't even allow them to have coffee machines in their own space. They have to walk outside to the coffee room. And there we want them basically to communicate and become themselves like cluster managers, bridging gaps that will always be without people meeting.
Hmm. We in the States, we've had a lot of movement within the technology space, more sort of this co-working space and investments in communities. And I've heard it described that you can look at it from both ways. You're either increasing serendipity that people are going to come across, or reducing serendipity in the fact that they're going to find the right individuals to have these engaging discussions with, and to find like-minded folks that are fighting similar battles. So you had mentioned, Thor, that you were schooled here in the States. You're a Tar Heel. And you spent some time, 4 years in the early 90s, stateside down near the Bible Belt, as you had mentioned. How did you decide to come to the U.S. for college? And could you tell us a little bit about your experience?
Well, I think in many ways, probably we can say that part of the good thing of being from such a small island is that we all had to travel abroad for our studies. So it means that we are kind of a homogeneous society, Iceland, but we have a higher proportion of young people traveling to other countries to study, because we had just the necessity, as we didn't have the university system here, to provide at least not the widespread interest that is found here. So I had to choose, and my siblings, I have actually five siblings, all of them had already studied abroad, me being the youngest of the sons and of the brothers. And so it was like just a natural thing to travel abroad. And for us, always being from Iceland, something East Coast is very much like close to us. So that was the first thing. And secondly, my wife was with me, my wife-to-be. She wanted to study architecture. So we found a marvelous place in the University of North Carolina system to stay in North Carolina. And so that is how it came about with my BS and master's degree in economics. It was amazing. I must tell you that I think it's, even though we have an amazing society here in Iceland, we feel very high trust level and good people. It was very good experience to come to the U.S. I always remember a professor that I met, and I'd already been just talking to for 2 weeks when we came in the fall. He asked me whether we would be here over Christmas, being in North Carolina. And I said we hadn't decided whether we would go home for Christmas or not. And he replied by saying, if you're going to be in in North Carolina, please let me know. I would like to invite you over for Christmas dinner. And it was just enlightening for me to find the warmth for so many, from so many people in the Bible Belt, as I call it. And I've enjoyed it ever since. Still very many good friends that I have there.
You're a very tall dude and big guy. Do you ever think about trying out and playing maybe the Twin Towers with Eric Montross over there at UNC?
That might be an idea. No, I never know.
Maybe bring that back for like the alumni years, right? Something like that.
Absolutely.
Hey, so in recent years, though, you have been traveling throughout our coastal cities here in the U.S. You had mentioned New Bedford and up in Portland, Maine, Alaska, Seattle. Where does the U.S. stand as far as future outlook of our fisheries and our blue economy as compared to other global cities?
I think in many ways we will find so many similarities between seafood industries in coastal areas all around. It's a tough business, and in many ways I found that these similarities are that people are just continuously saying we need to catch more, and there are all kinds of hindrances that have led to that the business in many of these coastal areas is tough. But at the same time, we feel that the need for this networking is huge. There is it seems like they are kind of, many of the coastal areas are kind of like, I would even describe them as the black holes, the areas where there's no interest from the financial community to be a part of the industry, at least very limited. There's very little R&D in the seafood industry in these coastal areas, even though R&D outside, as I told you, like 50 miles away, might actually be some of the most impressive R&D institutions in the world, and so on and so forth. So I've just been shouting out that we need to have the matchmakers all around to make these connections, because we still have these amazing opportunities, we feel, to do better. And I would say we could actually do more with less in terms of the fishing industry. It's not only a matter of the amount of the catch, it's more a matter of using the whole fish or the whole crustacean shells, or creating new opportunities for young people that are in these areas and are actually leaving these areas. And I'm so often meeting young people that are saying, I absolutely would like to stay in my coastal area, but there are no opportunities for me. I've been studying marketing, I've been studying biology, what have you. And sadly, my parents have been involved with fisheries or seafood for a long time, and I respect them highly, but I'm not going to be myself involved with the industry, as I'm not interested to become a fisherman or basic processing. So I've been, the greatest moments that I've had is that actually a moment here in Iceland some 2 years ago, when a girl came to me and said, I want to now study fisheries. And I said, why is that? She said, because I've seen actually some of the products that the cluster has been presenting from fisheries that are sort of the new fisheries, being either medical products or just good marketed retail products or what have you. And later on, 2 days later, a guy called me, who was a managing director of a fishing company, and said, I'm so glad that she met you and she's seen what the cluster has been doing, because now she's been sort of brought back into our industry. She was leaving the industry, but now she's brought back into the industry, and hopefully will become a key member of our new seafood company in the future. So these are sort of the best examples that I have from our work here.
We've seen a similar type situation here stateside, both in our terrestrial production as well as within our coastal communities, where we had generations of folks pulling away from any of that infrastructure, but there's been a resurgence, there's been a renaissance in interest around being more engaged with the land or with the sea, or connection to even things like regenerative ocean farming, which is a whole new iteration of giving back to ecological systems to improve the health of oceans and that lives within it. I think the question becomes, and to your point earlier, how do we catch more if there isn't more to catch? So how can we better manage our fisheries? I completely agree with the idea of better utilization, new techniques and technologies for fish leathers. Pretty cool idea. Biotech. But we still have 3 billion people around the world that are reliant on this. And it seems unless we start to invest in the biodiversity of our seas by cultivating and curating better and more sea life in it, then it's all for naught. Am I wrong in thinking that, Thor?
No, I think you're absolutely right. But we should just first realize that I think we estimate now that maybe 1.5 million metric tons of fish is actually being thrown into the ocean or used as landfill only in the U.S. And if we would start calculating this, we might actually end up saying we might actually provide protein for the biggest portion of those in North America that are lacking proteins. If we just started to use whatever we are actually catching today. So I completely agree with you. I think it's, and that's why we're actually saying we can do so much, much better with our proteins from the oceans already than we've done so far.
Do you find any, during your facilitation conversations where you're bringing these different stakeholders to look at a future of fisheries and look at it differently for economic development, for innovation space, are you bringing in folks that are looking at other larger issues? And I bring this up because people, I think it's become somewhat of a citizen's awakening around the idea of the floating plastic as almost an icing on the cake of our mismanagement of the oceans. But do you bring in stakeholders to start talking about controlling our waste stream? Because I think if we manage the fisheries responsibly, it's only going to get us so far. But if we're destroying the ecological infrastructure of our oceans, we're cutting off our nose to spite our face.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's of course, for Iceland, this is a huge issue. And we've been, of course, global warming is number one. We have seen such drastic changes in the weather here. So the ice is melting, et cetera, so all this is having huge influence on our fish stocks. So we've continuously been trying to establish dialogues with other nations on this. What I like is many of the companies that are around us here in Iceland are actually coming with many sort of green tech solutions for less pollution. The most exciting one that I have now in the Ocean Cluster House is definitely engineers that are developing electric boats, which could mean quite a lot of change for the fishing industry if we were able to develop the Teslas of the oceans. And that is at a point now where fishermen are getting quite interested as well. So I think in that sense, it's something that we're really looking into. With regards to the plastics, of course, I think we are realizing that this is such a global issue, meaning that many have to be brought to the table. And I'm glad to see that Iceland is participating in the major conferences on these issues. And so we're hoping that some things will be moving in the right direction in the coming years.
It's been fascinating stateside, and I'm sure you've seen it during your travels. But within a six-month period, it's these large organizations making broad changes around plastic straws, which you think, well, what kind of difference can that really make? But it is a pretty vast difference, and I think the biggest difference it opens up and the potential it creates is an awareness campaign that you as an individual, you as a consumer, can actually partake in this change. And it starts with straws, but it's much larger than that, right? It's in our food that we decide to eat. It's in our approach with recycling and a better appropriation and teaching our kids the right way, because hopefully this is a generational conversation that we can start to fix these problems.
Yeah, I completely agree. Absolutely. Yeah. So I think it's, we feel also that this, the new generation is much more aware than the elder generation. So I think, all this is moving in the right direction. The question always will be whether we are a little bit too late or not.
Well, we don't have much of an option. I guess we got to make it happen somehow. So, and one of the areas that has moved in that direction. We've been talking a lot about the open caught fisheries, but it is, and I had mentioned the term, the concept of regenerative ocean farming, or really just aquaculture, shellfish aquaculture, sea green aquaculture, and that next iteration where people are investing in better ecological systems, especially in marine ecosystems where keystone species live. It's in the East Coast, there's been a huge resurgence towards this and a lot of interest in partaking in farming the right approach. Do you focus a lot on that within the Iceland Ocean Cluster?
We have a growing industry here in Iceland with sea farming. We are a little bit skeptical. We think this can be done the right way, but there is always going to be risks with our natural resources as well. So we need to be careful. And it's absolutely great to see these large farms talking about the future of for instance, salmon farming becoming such a big player in the economy and for global feeding the global world, etc. But at the same time, we just have to be careful. And I think we are. There's sometimes a little bit of a bonanza when it comes to sea farming, not only in Iceland, but elsewhere. And we need just to make sure that we are taking these steps professionally and making sure that we're not in any doubt about the environment and the environmental impacts of these fairly large farms on sea.
Hmm. For my last question, I wanted to ask, and this is more of a general comment, I'm intrigued by Iceland as a whole. So Iceland seems to punch way above its fighting weight, meaning that, you know, for a small population of 330,000, which is the population of a city like Lexington, Kentucky, you don't see Lexington, Kentucky taking on Harry Kane and the British footballers, never mind ocean health. Is it part of being from Iceland? Are you forced innovators? Are you influencers because of how you've been brought up and the, who you are as individuals?
That's a very big question. I don't have any good answer. One of the things that I've noticed, though, is that part of our success probably comes from the fact that we have not been very popular in the global arena with regards to businesses. So we don't have any McDonald's. We don't have any Starbucks. We're too small for these large chains to play, to show interest in what we're doing. And this means that we have to do it all ourselves. And just when you're mentioning in your intro that I've written books, we're actually looking at each other and saying, someone has to be writing these books. It's not the best books that we're writing, but we're at least doing it because someone has to write in Icelandic language, our own thoughts, etc. So I think it's partly, of course, creating this probably a little bit higher egoistic society in mostly very fairly positive way to say it, that we just have to do the same things as larger nations with fewer people. And it means that we're probably looking at ourselves as being having to be a little bit more responsible for these various aspects of society. And I think, therefore, that the mindset is right in many ways. And I think, if I may just a little bit spin from that, I think one of the reasons we have done so well in fisheries is that we do not have many other resources. And we have never been able to treat seafood lightly, in a way, the seafood industry. We've just had to say, if we have not met many resources, we have to provide well with these resources, and we've had to treat them well. We have to fish sustainably, of course, and we have to make sure that we're getting as much value out of these amazing proteins as we can. But this is more of a necessity than anything else. I'm meeting so many people from countries where they will say fisheries is probably 0.1% of our GDP or whatever. We had it nearly up to 50 to 70% of our GDP in the past. So it meant that we had to take that very seriously. And it probably created this culture that the Iceland Ocean Cluster is first and foremost benefiting from and creating a little bit more value through our ideology, but still being in a society where this culture was a big part of our success.
Great stuff, Thor. Thor, where can our listening audience learn more about the Iceland Ocean Cluster?
We have a website, website called theoceancluster.is. We've been all around, so I think you will find quite a lot about what we're doing on our, not only on our website, but on various places, YouTube, etc. But and as well, if people are interested, I would love to hear from our friends from abroad. So please be in touch if you're interested.
Fantastic. Yeah, I'll include a link on the write-up, and I'll just reiterate, if they can come see you in Boston, the expo, I think, happens in March, and then the Brussels one closer to the summer. But it is exciting. It's intriguing, being a native New Englander, to see the interest in our coasts, but I think in ocean health as a collective. I like your ideology. I think it's quite intriguing, the if not me, then who mentality, and the fact that everything is aspirational and you take accountability for one another in the Iceland mentality. You know, that's great. And as you mentioned, I think it somewhat stems out of being as a necessity, but the iterations you've taken to look at that you're processing 50 to 60 million cod a year and getting 80% carcass utilization and trying to reduce the issues we have here stateside, which is 1.5 million tons, I think you had mentioned, of dead loss or undervalued, lesser value fish that aren't finding a home. We have a lot of opportunity to find efficiencies in the systems. And it seems like the Icelandic Ocean Cluster is that location to help facilitate a lot of those conversations.
Yeah, I definitely hope so. I'm glad to inform you also, Aaron, that we're actually hoping to open the Ocean Cluster House, the New England Ocean Cluster House in Portland, Maine, in June. You're probably one of the first to hear this, but that's at least our hopes right now. And so we cross our fingers. It would be, I think it could become a game changer in Maine. That's what we're hoping, at least.
Well, I've spent quite a bit of time in Maine, and I look forward to coming to see it after June. So, Thor, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to speak with me today. I learned a great deal. I know our listening audience will as well. So thanks for taking the time.
My pleasure, Aaron.